Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
Ah, here we go on a Friday in which we're absolutely jammed. Live in L.A., wet, soggy L.A. again. This is The Herd. Wherever you may be and however you may be listening, we're on iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, FS1, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, you name it, we're there. Joy Taylor is joining me. We have Tony Boselli, the former All-Pro offensive lineman for the Jacksonville Jaguars, is going to talk about. This is a great draft for tackles. It's the best tackle draft in a long time, and Tony Boselli is one of the probably the first or second best offensive linemen in USC history. Anthony Munoz and Tony Boselli, and a great guy will be joining us. And Joy Taylor, how are you?
I'm good. The rain is a little gloomy, but it's a good excuse to stay in the house.
Yeah, we're going to get better weather here, and throughout part of the country, we're going to get some better weather coming up. And again, more encouraging news on the coronavirus and the hospitalization and ICU rates going down and down and down and down. We are there or closer to the peak than we've been before. So I am not a big fan of blamers and finger pointers. I'm a solution guy. I don't follow people on Twitter who are blamers. During this virus, blame, 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 blame. I follow people who have solutions. I think there's enough negativity. I don't want to follow dark, angry people who are looking to blame. If I hear Trump in the first two sentences, I'm out. I'm not my favorite president, but I'm out. Find a solution. So all I've been hearing about this NFL draft is blame, finger pointing, whining. You can't have a draft. We don't have a pro day. Oh, we found a solution. Trent Dilfer and Tua and their agent set it up. Private workout, filmed it, sending a tape to all 32 teams, 55 scripted throws, another 20 throws in a dynamic drill, fewer than 10 people present. We found a solution. Colin, I couldn't be there. Stop. If you don't have enough information now with Tua, imagine drafting a Pac-12 or a Big 12 quarterback when they play in a conference where there's no defense and very few NFL defensive players. I have 2 years of tape on Tua, three if you count the game against Georgia his freshman year, against the best college football defenses, NFL people all over the Georgia defense, the Auburn defense, the Clemson defense in the ACC, the LSU defense, all sorts of NFL guys all over the SEC, and I saw him play for 2 years and carve him up. I saw him carve up LSU on one leg, 418 yards, four TDs. You draft a lot of these college quarterbacks. Carson Wentz, what conference was he in? Patrick Mahomes, how do I know if he's good? Baker Mayfield, it's a pillow fight in the Big 12. I can call Nick Saban. I've now got a video. I've got doctors medically clearing him. I've got 2 years of SEC tape. I've got NFL combine interviews. And you're still blaming? You're a crappy GM. Name somebody in America during this crisis who is getting everything they want. I've read stories about nurses and doctors during the virus without masks, having to improvise and create masks and outfits. Do they have everything? I mean, to a lesser degree, Joy and I are doing a three-hour radio show. There's no games, okay? Who during this crisis is getting everything they want? You just got a tape on Tua from Trent Dilfer. 32 teams get it. 2 years of tape. Call Nick Saban. Think about this. Here's what happens in life. What's the old saying? Give somebody an inch, they take a mile, right? Like, to give your kid a little freedom, and all you know, the next day they're at Coachella in a different state, right? We all worry about parents. You give them an inch, they take a mile. The first dynasty in the NFL that I ever saw was the Pittsburgh Steelers. It was created, Joy's hometown, in the mid-70s. None of Terry Bradshaw's games were on television. There were no cell phones. No FaceTime. No internet. Oh, by the way, there was no combine until 1982. So that means there was no combine. You couldn't see Terry Bradshaw at the combine. You couldn't see his games. Couldn't call him, right? He was out fishing. And they drafted him. And you're complaining now because you got 2 years of film on Tua. Nick Saban's coached in the NFL. The SEC's full of NFL guys. And now I got a tape and you're not there and you're complaining. I would like to remind you, blamers. I like solution people. Let me tell you about pro days. Johnny Manziel, 2014 pro day. Quote, his stock shot through the roof. Some moved him up to number two. A flawless workout. He made every throw. Sam Bradford's 2010 pro day. Said Gil Brandt, it's the best I've ever seen since Troy Aikman. Jamarcus Russell. Mike Mayock, who knows his football, said, it's the best I've ever seen from any quarterback in league history. You know what a bad pro day, Joy? Teddy Bridgewater, who just made millions of dollars. Teddy Bridgewater was terrible at his pro day. So none of us are getting everything we want. This is about finding a solution. It is a semi-solution to a virus that's making us work harder and improvise and figure stuff out. If you can't, I say it's much easier to draft an SEC quarterback who I've got several years of tape on against NFL-level defenses than it is to draft a Big 12 quarterback who is in a pillow fight, who rarely faces an elite pass rush. How about Clemson's players? Clemson is so much better than everybody else in the ACC since Miami and Florida State are down. How can you judge anybody for Clemson? All their players dominate every Saturday. I mean, last night I had a 2 hour, 90 minute to 2 hour virtual happy hour on Zoom with friends. And you know what I thought when I was done with it? I thought it wasn't as noisy as a bar is, wasn't smoky. I was able to go to the bathroom and grab something to eat and not pay for it while I was on it. And I thought, you know what? I kind of like it. I kind of like it. You go to a pro, one of these pro days that everybody's bitching about. You go to one of these things, and then you get influenced by people sitting next to you. And everybody's like, ooh, you ever seen like a runway model show? And you sit there next to a bunch of fashion designers, and you may look at an outfit and go, but if you're sitting next to Calvin Klein, and Calvin Klein is like, bravo, I love it, it may influence your opinion. If Belichick is next to you and he's like, ooh, you may not like somebody and go, oh. This way, you watch the film of Tua, you get it in your room by yourself, it comes down to you. And let me give you a trick that Belichick used to do when he brought people into the organization. This is an old Belichick trick. I've heard about this twice now inside the Patriots organization. Belichick would give you a tape of somebody and he wouldn't tell you as a scout who it was. And they would make the tape a little, they'd edit it so it was a little grayer, a little darker. And he'd say, do you like this player? And the player was already in the league. He was already in the NFL. And they'd say, what do you think about this guy? And it was old tape. And the point for Belichick was, I don't want you to be influenced by anybody. I want you to give me what, and it would be like a Pro Bowl left tackle. And if the guy was like, I don't know if I like him. He's like, yeah, he's playing right now in Houston. He's a Pro Bowl left tackle. That's the game Belichick used to play because he didn't want his scouts to be influenced by media, talk shows, and other scouts. This pro day workout should be the future. Not out having beers, talking about guys, and sitting next to guys, and watching body language of other scouts. Here's the tape. Make your call. SEC, 2 years, call Saban, FaceTime to a medical clearance, watch the pro day on tape. If you can't figure it out, you shouldn't be a scout.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
It is very easy for a guy like me, or even Joy, right? We can rip somebody after they make a mistake. That's easy. But I like for both of us to have opinions before something happens. So in real time, therefore, I'm culpable for my opinion. When the Rams got Brandon Cook, I hated it. I said, I like him, But if Sean Payton and Bill Belichick bail on somebody, that's a sign. It's like Warren Buffett bailing on a stock. You may be concerned about acquiring the stock. And I also didn't like what they paid him. So full disclosure, I never liked Brandon Cooks. Great kid. Wonderful kid. He's got concussion issues. I've been told he's considered retirement. I think he's a little bit of a one-trick pony as a receiver. He's a speed guy. I don't think you have to put your best corner on him to limit him and marginalize his game. I also think the Rams had plenty of good wide receivers. That was not a team weakness. The O-line had no depth. The linebackers at the time were average. That was a problem. And he's expensive. And so, great kid. I was never a fan of what he did in New England. New England saw it, moved off, and I didn't like the Rams doing it. So let me start with that. Good kid, I wouldn't pay him. But this trade is really not about Brandon Cooks. It's about two teams with talent in big markets who are increasingly dysfunctional. So let's start with Houston. I have defended Bill O'Brien as a coach. I don't like him as a GM. And even the DeAndre Hopkins move, he just didn't want to renegotiate the contract. I think he should have gotten a couple second-round picks, not fourth-round picks, but I understood moving him. So I've tried to be defend Bill O'Brien more than most. But let me ask you, they have Will Fuller, can't stay healthy. Randall Cobb, Green Bay got rid of him because he was always hurt. Kenny Stills I like, but he missed three games last year. And Brandon Cook, concussion issues. Are you guys just in the business of finding wide receivers who are not healthy? And it's the greatest wide receiver draft all these scouts and GMs are saying in the last decade. You gave up a 57th pick, a mid-second round pick. There are going to be Pro Bowl wide receivers taken in the second, third, and fourth round. And they're going to be cheap labor, you know, like what the Patriots want. I don't get it from Houston's standpoint. You know, Bill O'Brien now is the head coach and the GM. He's got too much darn power. It's like when you're the boss and the coach, essentially his parents left for the summer and left him the house, and he's just lost control. And they gave him some money, and he spent all of it in the first 3 weeks, and now he's eating cornflakes for dinner. He's just making crap up, trying to cover his butt for previous bad moves. I don't like it at all for Houston. Secondly, for the Rams. Oh, Colin, you're an L.A. guy. You'll probably support what the Rams did. No, I won't. They pay too much money, and they pay everybody early, and they fall in love with players. Wrong. The great personnel people fall in like with everybody. Even Belichick with Brady. It was mostly a like affair, not a love affair. And, you know, the Rams, if Bill O'Brien is the kid whose parents left him the house for the summer and he's gone out of control, the Rams are the guy that loves cars and keeps buying cars and has a collection of cars and wants to show everybody his cars and he doesn't need all the cars. Here's my sports car. Here's my SUV. Here's my Hummer. Here's my Kia. And guess what? The minute you drive them off the lot, they're all worth 30% less. They just collect stars. And in the end, think about this. Brandon Cooks was under contract in 2018 for $8 million and could have been franchised for $16 million, meaning the Rams could have theoretically gone year to year and paid him $25 million for the first 2 years. Instead, they gave him a new contract, paid him $42 million first 2 years, and by waiting until March 15th to trade him, that triggered a $4 million roster bonus for Cooks. Now, on his way out of town, they'll have a $22 million cap hit. I mean, again, if you fall in love with cars and keep buying them, they lose 30% when they get off the lot. The Rams and the Texans are doing something I hate in life. They're confusing activity for efficiency. It's just bad move, bad move, bad move, bad move, trying to follow up on a move that didn't work. New rule in the NFL. Pay almost nobody big money and never pay anybody except the star quarterback early. And you'd stay out of 90% of these problems.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
Oh, I saw this. So yesterday, Tua, and I do think he's a medical concern, but I think he's a great kid, and I think he looks like Drew Brees to me, left-handed. So Trent Dilfer had a workout with him, said he throws better than Aaron Rodgers and Dan Marino. Well, Dan Marino is the greatest release I've ever seen, so I'm not going to go there, and Aaron Rodgers is pretty damn good. But I do think Tua is better at his age than Aaron was at his, but Aaron's become an all-time great player. But here's the thing about risk. Outside of Jerry Jeudy, the wide receiver for Alabama, and Chase Young, the pass rusher for Ohio State, this whole damn draft is risk. Tua, medical risk. Tristan Wirfs is an offensive lineman everybody loves, top 10. Some people think he's a guard, not a tackle. Joe Burrow, average arm, only really great 1 year in college. He'll go number one. Baker Mayfield walked on two times. He went number one. Last year, Kyler Murray was 5'9 and a first-round baseball draft pick. Many speculated he likes baseball more than football. He got drafted number one. The whole draft is a risk. Carson Wentz played in the middle of nowhere. Risk. Isaiah Simmons, who I think is unbelievable for Clemson. They don't know what position he plays. Nobody has any idea what position he plays. So this whole thing is about risk. You are giving, think about this. Your brain is fully developed at 25. That's what they say. So you're giving 22-year-olds millions of dollars, asking them to move to a different city, and asking them to be the face of the franchise. That's not risk. How many 22-year-olds do you give the keys to a billion-dollar business to? This whole thing is just managing risk. I've said this about the virus. Once we get past the peak, people will die because of the virus. We have to manage risk. We're managing mental health. We're managing car deaths. Once you get past the peak, and that's the scary part because hospitalizations, getting crammed, people can't get in. Once you get past that, we just have to manage this. It won't be perfect. We will open up universities and some kids will get it again. You're managing it. That's what we do in life. And in fact, here's the funny thing about risk. I'm going to go to the last four drafts. The quarterback who had a lot of risk, and you tell me how they did. Last year, Kyler Murray, 5'9", baseball player. I would say today, Arizona's darn happy with the first year. The year before, tell me how this worked out. Lamar Jackson. He was the risk guy, right? Year before that, it was Patrick Mahomes. Kansas City moved up to get him because he lost in college, had a wrist surgery, ACL joint, losing record. Yeah, he makes a lot of mistakes. He's a little bit of a loose cannon. How'd that work out? Year before, Carson Wentz, hurt in college, played against nobody. How's that worked out? So the last four quarterbacks with all the risk are Kyler, Lamar, Patrick, and Wentz. I'm going to go with, I like all of them. So it's almost like I grew up in the Pacific Northwest, so I have some Nike stock and I have some Starbucks stock. I buy it every year. I'm not going to get rich on that. They're pretty safe companies, right? Well run. I know people in the businesses. I buy Starbucks and Nike stock. I'm not going to get rich on it. You know how you get rich? Being a seed money angel investor in 2008 for Uber. You want to get rich. It's not buying IBM stock and Starbucks stock. You want to get rich in the NFL. You're going to have some risk because some people are going to pass on people allowing you to go get that player. If Tua scares off 24 teams and you're Miami and have 13 picks, draft two quarterbacks in this draft. Draft two at five and, you know, with one of your later picks, you find a kid at a smaller school and you're like, yeah, he's not Tua, but we like him. With that, I bring in Joel Klatt, voice of college football at our network, Fox, Fox NFL draft analyst as well. Check out his mock draft on foxsports.com and at NFL on Fox. It's out new. Okay, so I look at it, Klatster, and Bengals take Burrow, Chargers take Tua. You have no Justin Herbert in the first round. What do you say for yourself?
Yeah, I mean, where the teams are slotted, I had a hard time fitting him in.
Yeah.
Okay, so I fully expect him to go in the first round. Colin, I just think it's going to be a trade to do so, right? So as I was just going through the practice, you know, I could have given the Dolphins Herbert at 18 or maybe even 26, and I thought about it really hard at 18, but I went with the linebacker Patrick Queen from LSU anyways. Listen, I'm not quite as high on Herbert as others, so that's going to influence this mock draft. Now, and I'm also one that's trying to be realistic about where people will and won't get drafted. And Herbert is a glaring omission from this mock draft. So I'll admit that. However, I will suggest that when you look at next year's draft with Fields and Lawrence, there might be quarterback needy teams that won't take the risk on a guy like Herbert or Love, because I do believe that there is a significant drop off between our top two quarterbacks in the draft, Burrow and Tagovailoa. And then once you get down to Herbert and Love, Herbert and Love have substantial risk. And I would argue that Herbert, while maybe the safer pick over Love, doesn't have quite the ceiling, in large part because, Colin, we've seen him play a substantial number of snaps. He's got a lot of experience at the college level, and he still is making some of the same mistakes and has some of the same traits that he struggled with in his youth, if you will, at Oregon. So those are the reasons, but I will say that I do believe he'll be drafted in the first round. Where, I'm not quite sure. I do believe it's going to be a trade at some point once you get down past, like, pick 15.
Well, Miami's got the most picks, so it won't be a surprise that Miami has a very good draft. You have them, and I don't think this is crazy. I did not see your mock draft before I said this, my staff as a witness. I said last hour, 30 minutes ago, I said, don't be shocked if Miami doesn't take a quarterback and says to themselves, you know what, Ryan Fitzpatrick, we're going to go and solve our defense. Brian Flores has a defensive background, or our offensive line. And then with one of their two other first-round picks, goes for Jordan Love, who is a developmental prospect, but they have Ryan Fitzpatrick for a year, so they can just sit him for a year and let him figure it out. So you have the Dolphins taking Tristan Wirfs, a big, beefy offensive tackle from Iowa. I don't think it's nuts. I got to be honest with you. Nobody's discussing this. Why do you have him taking a tackle?
Well, they need tackle help, first of all. They have all of that draft stock like you were talking about. And when you look at what I believe they're going to be trying to do from a model perspective, I think it's going to, in some cases, mirror what New England was trying to do for all of their years. And so when I look at their offensive line, I see big offensive tackles. In particular, a guy like Nate Solder comes to mind, who went to Colorado. Now, he's not in New England anymore, but he was there for a substantial part of this run. Wirfs is athletic, so he can get out on the screen game. He's incredibly athletic. You saw that at the combine. He's also young. He's going to grow even a little bit more. He's huge. He's physical. He can great in the run game. And I just think he's a great prospect, in particular at the tackle position, where I think he's got the highest upside of any of these tackles. Now, it wouldn't shock me if they went Mekhi Becton, who's a gigantic player from Louisville. Shock me if they went Wills from Alabama, or even maybe Andrew Thomas, but those might be a reach at five, whereas Wirfs, at least as a prospect, can project into that top five because of his incredible athletic ability.
By the way, you have seven or eight wide receivers in the first round. Why in the world would I draft a wide receiver in the first round when there's 60 available in this draft?
Yeah, I mean, going through this, I couldn't agree with you more. Now, when you look at some of these team needs, a lot of people need wide receivers. So as the NFL, at least in my estimation, is more wide receiver needy than they've ever been, this might be the deepest wide receiver draft that we've ever seen. And what happens is, once you get a run on a position, Colin, you know this, you've been covering the draft and watching the draft for so long, it's a bit of a domino effect, right? So once you get the first wide receiver off the board, then people say, well, we better go get our guy. Well, we better go get our guy. And then all of a sudden what you get is teams at the back end of the first round, who I would say absolutely have to get wide receivers, like the Vikings and the Packers, may be sitting there with quality wide receivers because of the depth of the position. I've got Denzel Mims going to the Minnesota Vikings, and then Brandon Ayuk from ASU going to the Packers. I really think those two teams are going to be selecting wide receivers late. And so when I'm going through this exercise, it's just a domino effect of teams ahead of them took wide receivers. There's first-round graded wide receivers available, so I gave them to those teams late in the first round.
You know what I just noticed? You know, I always use the American Idol example, that they only give you about 15 seconds to sing an American Idol because talent jumps off the television set. You these guys complaining about pro days, my takeaway is talent jumps off the TV set. You only have six seniors going in the first round. It is a junior, meaning the really good players don't need to stay in college forever.
That's right.
Six seniors. Now I want to segue to this. Pro days. Okay, Johnny Manziel, Sam Bradford, Jamarcus Russell had great pro days. Teddy Bridgewater was awful. He's the one that just got the money. What am I? I don't like. Here's why I don't like pro days. Because I'm sitting next to a bunch of scouts, and I can be influenced by their oohs and ahs and body language. And in the end, I'm talking myself into stuff that I've already seen on tape. And I also don't like it because it's the most comfortable workout a player has. And the NFL's about discomfort, not comfort. So I don't buy pro days have major influence. What do you think?
Well, I think that they have. Listen, I agree with you in principle. Unfortunately, I think that at times teams get sucked in and decision makers get sucked in and place too much importance on them. I couldn't agree with you more. Listen, pro days, in particular from a quarterback, you have to understand, and let me just describe this. I don't know if people really understand this, but quarterback's the only position that designs their own pro day workout. Okay, they bring in their own private coach. they get out there, and it's very comfortable. Hey, we're going to throw five passes to the left and five passes to the right, and they're going to be in this tree, and this is what we're going to try to show you. All the other guys, all the other position groups, save for the wide receivers who are running routes for the quarterback, they get taken through a workout by just one of the scouts in the building. So for sake of argument, the New York Giants linebacker coach or scout is out there, and he's like, okay, give me all the linebackers. And he just starts throwing them through impromptu drills. They can't get ready for them. They're seeing the drill for the very first time. And so they're uncomfortable in those settings. So I genuinely believe that pro days are much better of an evaluation period for every other position outside a quarterback because of that comfortable aspect that you were talking about. If you're looking at what you get watching a quarterback in pro days, virtually nothing. Now, here's what I would say, Colin. If you see him doing things that you haven't seen on tape, throw up a big caution flag, right? This should be for confirmation only. No new information. Okay, if you show me that all of a sudden you can throw that route in shorts and a T-shirt, I'm actually going to downgrade you because I'm like, wait, why can't you take it from the practice field onto the tape and put that into action during game play? Then the other two things that I think are most important about the pro day time is that you actually can sit with the quarterback and meet with him, talk with him about X's and O's, talk with him about his scheme and your scheme, see if he can pick it up. And then you can have access to the entire collegiate staff. You can talk to the academic support advisor. You can talk to the trainer. You can talk to the assistant trainer. You can talk to the strength coach. You can talk to the position coach. You can talk to the opposing coordinator from that player. And you can get a really good picture of what this kid is as a person holistically once you bring him into your building. And I think those are the most important parts of pro day. But when it comes to just the actual physical aspect of the quarterback throwing, I think it's the most overrated thing in the draft process, period.
By the way, you set 12 Colorado passing records when you quarterbacked the Buffaloes. You had a pro day. How'd it go?
Well, I mean, 12 in my first year starting, 44 overall. Get it right. Facts don't care about your feelings. But who cares about that? My pro day was horrendous. Okay, here's the deal, Colin. We had no wide receivers coming out for the draft, so I had nobody to throw to. I had a couple of tight ends that were coming out, a running back that was coming out. If you remember, a guy named Lawrence Vickers was a fullback that was coming out. Two tight ends, Joe Klopfenstein and Quinn Sebnewski, who played for a little bit in the National Football League. But we had to pull guys that were just like NFL free agents at the time that were working out at this place called Velocity down the road, and I had to bring them out and throw to them. It was terrible. And let me just tell you that my strength was never sitting in shorts and a T-shirt and getting people to ooh and ah at my arm strength. But what I could do was operate a system. So it was not lost on me that I earned my contract, albeit an undrafted free agent contract, because I went to rookie minicamps both in Detroit and New Orleans without contracts and earned them over those 3 days by operating the system during those 3 days. I could get us in and out of the huddle. I could operate the checks. I could throw the football on time, so on and so forth. Now, I didn't have nearly the ability or the stature or the medical record to stick in the NFL, but that's the process that was better for me. And so from a young age, I knew that pro days were worth very little as it relates to what that player's success is going to be at the next level.
Yeah, that's a pretty little record. I have big 44 records at Colorado, right? Is that what you said?
Well, I mean, I don't think many of them are standing now, but, yeah. You know, give me a pigskin, I'll throw it over that mountain.
Yeah, I think they used to run like the wishbone or something. That's probably why it broke all
those
things.
That's right. See, but that's smart of me, Colin. Yeah. You gotta respect the fact that I was smart enough to go to a place that had very low expectations, used to run the wishbone, and it's like, then you can leave with all the records, right?
You're right. All right, hey, okay, one more. His mock draft, by the way, is at foxsports.com and NFL on Fox. That's a Twitter thing. All right, what the hell do I do with Isaiah Simmons? Every time I watch Clemson, he makes every other tackle. He doesn't have a position. He reminds me of Shaq Thompson, Carolina, out of Washington. He was a great high school safety. They used him at running back. He could be linebacker, and he's a good player. I like Shaq Thompson. What do I do with Isaiah Simmons? Where does he go, and what do I do with him?
Isaiah Simmons is the second safest pick in the entire draft. You said it in your question. Every time I turn on the tape, he makes every play.
Every play.
Why wouldn't you want that?
Oh, no, I agree.
I don't care where he lines up. You care where he lines up if he makes every play?
No,
line him up like 10 yards away from the ball. Who cares? He's always at the football. Isaiah Simmons is a phenomenal player. And remember now, in today's game, what do we see more and more of? We see hybrid players being more important, both offensively and, Colin, defensively. So it's going to pay huge dividends for whatever teams draft Isaiah Simmons that he can play safety and cover well and has great range. He can play linebacker. He can cover the slot. He can be in the box. Yeah. He can also blitz off the edge. So he's dominant, not just good, but dominant at every level of defense. I think that's an incredibly valuable commodity when you're talking about defense in the modern age.
Oh, by the way, I didn't ask you this. I thought I did. My producer reminded me, Greg, I didn't. Tua's pro day tape, what'd you make of it?
Fine. I mean, I don't care. I don't care how you look right now. I think Tua is a fabulous player. I love his game. He's not quite Burrow, but that's mainly because of the injury history that he's suffered. Again, you know what I can't see in a pro day? Is the fact that my biggest knock on the field with Tua is that he thinks he's more elusive than he is.
Yeah.
That one trait has led to all of his injuries. He thinks he can get away from guys. He can't. They roll up on his ankles. He's had two ankle injuries and a fractured hip because of that one trait that I think is very concerning, in particular when you're moving up a level and all those players around you are going to be bigger and faster.
Joe Klatt set 44 records at Colorado. Most don't exist now. Most don't exist because they did move to the forward pass slightly soon after. All right, Klattster.
Right.
Good talking to you, buddy.
Put some respect on it. Oh, I love it, Colin. Thanks, brother.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
Oh, one of my favorite guys over a decade in the NFL, a Pro Bowler. TJ Hushmanzada, Fox Sports NFL analyst, also works out with a lot of these guys and knows his stuff. You know, I'm looking at this stuff, and I'm looking at all these players. You've worked out with Justin Herbert. Let's readdress this. You've worked out with Justin Herbert. You like him a lot, right?
Man, physically, it's something I've never seen before. He's big, and his arm is just unbelievable. You would have to see it. You can't even put it like I played and I've been around all the best quarterbacks. I've never seen anybody physically throw the ball like he does. Nobody.
Joe Burrow, you worked out with him?
Yeah.
What do you think?
I like Joe. Joe is super confident. And what really sold me was the last couple weeks it was raining almost every day.
Yeah.
And I don't think he threw one bad ball in the rain. Everything was on the money. And so Joe is going to be a really good quarterback just with his temperament, his confidence, and it shocked me that in the rain, everything was on the money.
What'd you make of Tua's tape and his pro day on film?
Tua is physically a talented player. It's just the injury history. Tua, had he not been hurt, him and Joe Burrow would have pretty much been fighting for that number one spot, and they probably still are. I thought it was impressive considering just having surgery when he did, coming back from a hip injury, putting that work, and Tua's super, super, super talented. It's just a matter of, is his body going to hold up?
Are pro days overrated?
Pro days are overrated. And okay, I'll give you this analogy, and we'll just talk quarterbacks for this instance. If we have a final exam in college, and our professor lets us take the test 3 to 4 times, we should score an A on that final. And so that's what's going on, especially with quarterbacks, is they practice this pro day time and time and time again with the same guys that are going to be running the routes. So when it's time for the pro day, they're going to perform well because they've already practiced it. They've already taken the exam before actually taking the exam. And so it's rehearsed. Jordan Palmer would have run Joe's pro day. Trent would have run and had ran Tua's pro day. John Beck and those guys, they did run Justin Herbert's pro day. And so you're taking the exam before the actual exam.
What was your pro day like?
My pro day was, number one, it was different. At the time, Oregon State, we didn't have an indoor facility, so we went outside, ran the 40. It was freezing cold. Went back inside, did the jumps, and that was it. No routes. And so myself, Chad, and a couple other receivers, we went up to USC's pro day. They wouldn't let us work out, so all the coaches, we went down to Dorsey High School, Jackie Robinson Field, and ran routes there. They all came down there.
How about that? The receiver, just on film, and I think there's a bunch of good ones, but when I look at Jerry Jeudy and I see his explosiveness, his first four or five steps, it doesn't even look – he's pulling away from LSU defenders, from Georgia guys, from Auburn guys. I look at him, and I think he's so much better than everybody else. What do you see having played the position for a decade in pro football?
It's not – I'm going to let people in on a secret. Not too many. And some know this. So there's some good trainers. Jeudy, number one, he was fortunate. He's trained with some guys that know what they're doing down in Florida. I will say that. The guys he's trained with in Florida, those trainers really know what they're doing. The key to playing receiver is not his first four steps. It's his ability to decelerate, his ability to stop and put his foot in the ground. He does that better than 90% of the guys in the NFL right now. Like, his ability to stop is unbelievable. He can decelerate. He can stop with the best of them, and that's why he creates so much separation.
Is there another receiver? Let's take Michael Pittman at USC. He's not a burner. I told somebody, a GM on the East Coast called me the other day, and he said, "Who's your most underrated player in the draft?" We were just joking around, and I said, "You're going to think I'm a homer because I live in L.A." I said, "I think Michael – I watched Michael Pittman's dad. He was tough as a $5 steak." And I said, "Pittman's a tough kid. He walked onto USC as a true freshman and was a great playmaking special teams guy. He's gotten better every year at USC, and I don't think USC last several years has had great coaching. Take Michael Pittman at USC. What do you see? He's not a burner. What do you see?"
Man, so I guess I could be called a homer, too. I'm privy to Michael Pittman because I just so happen to be working with him. Colin, it's exactly what – man, Pittman is a worker. When I tell you he's a worker, he could have one leg and he'll call you and be like, "Let's go work out." Like, he got a root canal in the morning, and we worked out 2 hours after. A root canal. And now, what Pittman is going to surprise some people, like, underrated, Pittman – can decelerate. He's big. He's tough. Pittman is going to play 10 years in the league because he can do what I just said about Jeudy. He can decelerate. If you can decelerate and create separation, you're going to play in the NFL. That's what it's about. It's not about how fast you are. Can you stop? Can you stop like a Ferrari, or do you stop like a car when they screech? It goes, "Burr." If they're making that much noise when they stop, they're not going to be successful. You need to stop right on a dime. And that's what Pittman can do. That's what I've taught him. And he's gotten better and better from the first day until the last day we're going to work. He's gotten better. And Pittman is going to be surprised if people think, "Oh, he's not a first or second round guy." He's going to surprise some people.
You got drafted by the Bengals in the seventh round out of Oregon State 19 years ago. So when you talk to Joe.
Damn, I'm old.
Well, you look good, though. So, and you've got. You're a curious human, so you're smart and thoughtful and. You're aging very, very well, but you know the Bengals, and Joe Burrow's probably asked you once about the Bengals. What concerned you about Joe Burrow going to the Bengals?
I mean, there's not – I'll look at the Bengals, and just from a on-the-field standpoint, they're 2-14. They have the number one pick for a reason. And when you look at the players they have, it's like, how are they not better? They have a good team when you look at the players that – if A.J. can come back healthy, they're going to be pretty good. They got Joe Mixon in the backfield. They got Tyler Boyd. They got John Ross. If he can stay healthy, that defense, they spent some money on free agency. They went out and got guys that were in the playoffs, and they paid these guys to come to Cincinnati. What concerns me is, with that being said, they haven't, with that talent, they should be playing better than what they are. That's the only thing that concerns me. Joe was super confident in himself. Oh, I can go to the Bengals. I never had to lose a season. Well, there's a lot of guys that come out of college without losing a season in their first year in the league. They lose. Kyler Murray can say the same thing.
Right.
I've never had to lose a season. You go to the Cardinals, you're going to lose. And so he has a tall task in front of him. It's not going to be easy. It's just the only thing that concerns me is with the talent that the Bengals have always had, they just can't seem to get over the hump. Is Joe the guy to do it? If he does it, it's going to elevate them. And if he doesn't, it's going to be like, yeah, another quarterback that went to the Bengals and couldn't get it done.
You're very tough-minded. How much of this league is physical and how much is psyche?
Oh, man, I would probably say 15% physical, 85% mental. And everybody can play. Everybody's a good – why are so many first-round guys, they don't make it? Physically, they have the talent. We can't see the mental capacity. We can't see the toughness. We can't see when it gets hard, are you going to fold? Are you going to capitulate? Or are you going to fight through that?
Right.
You don't see that until you get to that adversity. Is it going to reveal your character? And so you can't see that physically, and that's the biggest thing in the league. When you have these hard times, like we just said, with a Joe Burrow, I've never had to lose a season. And then you lose your first five or six games. How do you adjust? How do you react to that? How do you rebound from that? And that's you can't see that.
Did you ever get on your Bengals first two classes, the one you came in with and the one after, the first two, did you ever see a player with talent just mentally couldn't handle the league?
Colin, we had a player, and I believe he went to Mississippi State. We had a player. We were in training camp, and our training camp – first day of camp, two practices. Second day of camp, two practices. Third day of camp, two practices. Fourth day, you can't even walk, and you got to go practice. Literally, we had a guy not show up to practice and left and went home in the middle of the night. Like, I'm gone. Just quit. It was that hard. Like, you can't even walk, and you got to get up and go practice. And so that right there just shows you, like, oh, he was physically really good, but mentally he couldn't deal with it. And that happens. There's so many good players that get cut, really good players, but mentally they don't have the IQ or they don't have the toughness to deal with it.
Who is the strongest mental player, mentally strongest player you ever played with?
Oh, wow. That's a tough question. But to me, the guys that are really good players but aren't the greatest at their position physically, or when guys get hurt, like I look at a guy like Willie Anderson. He got banged up towards the end of his tenure with me in the Bengals, and he was still out there playing at a Pro Bowl level. Should be in the Hall of Fame, but that's another story. You look at guys like him. I look at a guy like Corey Dillon. Corey Dillon, I remember, had a car accident on the way to a game Sunday and still played in the game.
Wow.
And so there's so many stories like that. You're like, you going to play? Yeah, I'm going to play. You're like, all right, let's go. You good? And so it's so many guys that's just physical. There's guys that have problems at home with their wives or their kids or their parents, and they go out there and play. Chad would have problems with family problems, and nobody would know about it but myself and Marvin. He'd go out there and play, have 100 yards, and nobody knows what's going on in his personal life. But mentally, you got to block that out, and for those 3 hours on Sunday, go get it done.
Always love talking to you, man. You're smart. You're a pleasure to talk to. TJ Hushmanzada. You have a great weekend. We'll talk a couple more times before the draft, buddy.
Colin, I appreciate it. Take care. Keep up the great work, man.